When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
BSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number two of the program here on Tuesday morning. Again, coming up in the next hour, we're going to be joined by Alice Hoffman. She is the author of the book Practical Magic that the movie was based on, that a lot of folks like to watch this time of year. But she's also the author of the new book When We Flew Away, which is a novel of Anne Frank before the diary. So we're going to talk with her coming up in the next hour. But you know, South Coast Health does such a great amount of things for people in the community health-wise, but they're also trying to share the spotlight with some other great community organizations. And that's why we have the South Coast Health Community Spotlight, where you will hear from other organizations around the South Coast and the great work that they do. And we would like to feature one of those organizations this morning. All right, we are joined now by Paul Key. He's the Chief Development Officer for My Brother's Keeper. Paul, tell us about My Brother's Keeper and the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you. My Brother's Keeper is a Christian ministry that delivers household furniture and healthy groceries to local families in need. Every delivery we make is made to the homes of the families we serve, as we know that transportation is a barrier to so many. Every delivery made is made for free with no prerequisites for service. So if someone is in need, they don't have to show us an income statement. They don't have to show us that they're receiving maybe state or federal aid. All they need to do is call the helpline phone number on our website, which is mybrotherskeeper.org, and ask us for help. And as long as they live in the geographic territory we serve, we will help them out.
I think a lot of people around here have seen the trucks out and about, but what is the geographic territory that you serve?
So our main service is furniture assistance. Not uncommon for us to get a call, let's say, from a family that's moving out of an emergency shelter into a subsidized apartment, and they're starting from scratch. They don't have anything for furniture. And so that geographic territory for that program is about 50 cities and towns throughout southeastern Massachusetts. So Fall River, New Bedford to the border of the Cape, north of Braintree and Quincy.
And kind of talk us through the process of how it works if somebody does reach out looking for assistance.
Sure. So they call our helpline, and then our staff will speak with them and ask them questions in terms of how many beds they need, how many, you know, what they're looking for specifically for their apartment or their home. All of the furniture that we deliver is brought up to their place. So if they live in a third floor apartment in Fall River, we're carrying all that up. And if that includes a refrigerator, then we are bringing a refrigerator up three floors. Most of the furniture that we deliver is donated by local residents who donate this furniture very generously to us. The exception are beds. All the beds we deliver are brand new. The frames, the box springs, and the mattresses, we believe that everyone deserves the dignity of sleeping in a new bed. So we purchase those out of our fundraising budget.
So if I have a dining room set that I've replaced because I decided that I saw something in the store and I liked better, instead of having to find somebody to come and take that or bring it somewhere myself, I can call my brother's keeper, and you'll want to be able to provide that to a family that can use it.
Exactly. And we, you know, we get those generous offers every day. I will say we're very selective. You know, we usually what we'll do is ask that donor to send us photos of the items so we can look at them online. And once we've done that, assuming we feel that it's something we can use, we will send staff out to their place to take a look firsthand. And if it is something we feel the families we can serve will use, we will pick that up right from the donor's home and bring that back to our facility.
And I can imagine, too, that in, you know, in today's day and age, a lot of people are, you know, when they do move into a place, it's not even like they're looking to fully decorate and fully, they just need the basics. They just need what's able to make it so that instead of just being four walls and a roof, it actually feels like a home.
Absolutely. And you know, you nailed it. It's really, you know, beds, living room sets, dining room sets. You know, for those families who, let's say, are moving from that shelter setting, oftentimes it's as much as dishes, silverware, pots and pans, microwave ovens. It's as much as they need. You know, my role as chief development officer, I'm behind a desk most days. Once a month, I do go out on the road and help make deliveries to stay close to the mission. And I was out on the road over the summer and made a delivery to a family who lost everything in a fire. They were starting from scratch. Seven kids, nine people in the household. So we delivered eight beds to that one family. And we were carrying one of the beds up through the house. And the youngest daughter, six-year-old girl, looked up and smiled. And she said, "Do I get my own bed?" And we said, yes, you do. And she said, "You know, I've never had my own bed before." It was such a nice moment in reality that in spite of all the tragedy that family had just experienced, that now this little girl has her own bed to sleep in.
Well, now I think people are hearing that and they want to experience that kind of help. You know, they want to be able to help give that same moment to somebody else. I'm sure that you're always in need of volunteers to help.
Absolutely. You know, we are a ministry that last year completed over 18,000 deliveries of food, furniture, and also Christmas gifts. We have one of the area's largest Christmas programs. We only have 18 employees between our facilities in Dartmouth and Easton. So you can't make 18,000 deliveries with 18 employees. Volunteerism is really how we make all this happen. On any given year, we have about 5,000 volunteers that come through our doors to help us make these deliveries. And whether that those are school groups, church groups, work groups, or individuals who are interested in coming out to help, we're very flexible. You know, there are some volunteers who make a commitment. They come in one day a week, 2 days a week. Others, whenever they can, and they call us and let us know. And so we're always looking for volunteers. If you do look at our webpage, mybrotherskeeper.org, there is a button right on top for volunteer, and you can learn more information for that.
And I'm sure there are some folks listening saying, "I'd love to volunteer, but I can't carry things up three flights of stairs," but there's probably a role for anybody that wants to help.
There are, absolutely. You know, we have a warehouse in Dartmouth. And, you know, those groceries that go out the door and get delivered to the families we serve, they need to be packaged. And so we have volunteers who in the mornings are there packaging those groceries, getting everything sorted so that the afternoon volunteers can grab those bags and boxes of food and get out there in the road and make those deliveries.
Why don't you give everybody that contact info one more time?
Sure. The website is mybrotherskeeper.org. If anyone is interested in getting to know more about who we are, we have our annual event, the South Coast Soiree, coming up on Friday, September 27th. It's $75. But a great way to support our ministry and get involved with our community if someone's interested.
And I know everybody's probably thinking this. They're saying, "Tim, why didn't you ask us? You are a 501c3 tax-exempt organization. So does that mean that if people do make a donation to you, it is tax-deductible for them?"
It is tax-deductible. Yes, absolutely. And 91 cents out of every dollar we raise goes directly back into our services.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Paul, for joining us and for informing us about My Brother's Keeper. And hopefully we just got you a whole bunch of new volunteers.
I hope so. Thanks so much.
And thanks to South Coast Health for making that happen with the community spotlight. So we will be sharing the stories of lots of great nonprofit organizations across the South Coast with you in the coming weeks. And it's important to know what it is that they do, because a lot of people hear the names, they hear the organizations, they see, like with My Brother's Keeper, the trucks going around, but they're not exactly sure what role they play in the community and also what role they could play in helping them. So this way here, we can get the word out and spread that information around for you. So I got an app chat message here from Elliot, who says, "I shopped at Kmart growing up and I had no problem with it, mainly because I could always find t-shirts with my favorite characters on them." Yeah, I mean, that would be a place that I would go to get the latest character shirts. And it all depended on what it was. You know, like when I was a elementary school kid and I wanted Thundercats or He-Man or something like that, you could get that at Kmart. But then when I got to be older and I was like, well, I want something a little cooler, I would get my t-shirts at flea markets because that's where you could find the Simpsons, Beavis and Butthead, you know, whatever was the popular thing at the time. They had t-shirts and they were usually like $5 a shirt. So my mom would let me get one or two each time we went. And I had In Living Color shirts. I had Urkel. The best score for me though was my dad, who had a table at a flea market in Cordage Park in Plymouth. And whenever he was at the flea market, I would earn money by working with him, you know, $5, $10, whatever it was. And I would walk around and try to find the best way to spend that money. And there was a guy who had a box full of old rock and roll t-shirts. And there was a ton of them. There was probably like 20, 30 shirts in the box. And he sold me that whole box for $10. And so I had tons of band shirts. I think what was in there? Like Dio, Def Leppard. I think there was some Metallica in there. But then, you know, also some other ones as well. Like John Cougar Mellencamp. And I wore that as a gym shirt and got ragged on in eighth grade. They called me John Cougar because I had a Mellencamp because I had a Mellencamp shirt. But it was just for gym. It wasn't like I was wearing it all the time. Anyway, yeah. So where did you go for your back to school shopping? Where did you do your, you know, where'd you get your stationery from? Where'd you get your clothing from? For us, stationery was usually a trip to Building 19 or Christmas Tree Shop. And then clothes was always, like I said before, Zehr, Bradley's, Kmart. But school supplies, we would definitely go and get them at, you know, Building 19, Christmas Tree Shop, places like that, Bargain Outlet. Which meant we probably weren't getting Crayola crayons because they usually didn't have Crayola crayons. We were getting Rosart crayons, and I would argue every year that these are the worst crayons. They're terrible. And anybody that's ever used, I don't know anybody in the world that prefers Rosart crayons. I posted something about this on Facebook a while back, and Rosart got no love for their crayons. It was Crayola or nothing. But certainly not Rosart for sure. They were the absolute worst. Although they did make a good colored pencil. Those Crayola colored pencils were just too expensive. There's no way I was getting a fresh pack of those every year. But I loved colored pencils, man. Because I was a drawer. That's what I did. I drew my own comic books. My friend and I started our own comic book company, drawing comic books that nobody read but us. And you need the colored pencils for those. So the Rosart would get you by. They weren't as good as the Crayola, but when it came to crayons, no Rosart. Only Crayola. And it had to be that big 64-pack with the sharpener built into it. So if you have some back to, I know we're a little couple weeks late for back to school shopping, but it, you know, popped into my head this morning with the story that the last full Kmart store in America is closing. And honestly, I didn't even know there was any Kmarts remaining. There's talk of the resurrection, if you can believe it, of VHS stores. Now, they're not going to, you know, you're not going to get a chain like Blockbuster opening up all over the place again. But a lot of these, you know, like in New Bedford, we have a toy store, we have a record store, and we have all these different types of boutique kind of niche shops. And in some places, they're opening up VHS stores where they sell them. But there are some of these stores that are thinking about getting back into the rental market. Now, I would argue that's a dangerous thing to do nowadays because you can't, it's not like you, if somebody doesn't return a tape or breaks it, you can just order another one. But VHS is becoming hugely popular again. And I was, no, I'm not lying about this. I was at Savers. I have a VCR in storage. I don't know, you know, where in my storage unit it is. And I have some VHS tapes that were projects that I did in high school. But I don't have a VHS collection anymore. And I was sitting in Savers in Fall River with a VHS copy of the original Frankenstein and a VCR in my hand saying, you know what? I'm going to get back into watching VHS and I'm going to watch old 80s VHS horror. But I couldn't pull the trigger because I was like, how am I going to hook this up to my TV? My TV only has HDMI connections. How do I do this? I got to look into getting an adapter or something. But I'm seriously considering getting back into VHS just to see how the movies look. And then I've got to, you know, find the movies themselves. But anyway, 508-996-0500. We've got a couple of calls here on hold. So let's go to those. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. And you?
I'm doing all right.
I hear you talking about the Kmart closing it up. There's something else. I have a question. I don't know. Figure it out. There's stores that do very well and close. And then there's stores that are not doing well. And I see them still open. Like, there's not a person that I talk to that doesn't agree with why the hell did the Christmas tree shop close? Every single time I went there, the line was outrageous. People were shopping. Shopping carts were full. And they closed down. And then I go over to the Stop and Shop. Two people in the whole store walking around with a shopping cart. Two people. And this goes on all the time. And they're still open. So tell me why the stores that are making out are closing down. There's got to be another reason.
Well, first of all, I mean, there's a lot of factors that goes into it. And in some cases, it could be that, yeah, the store that you shop in is doing well. But in other places where they have other locations, they might not be doing well at all. And what happened with the Christmas tree shop is they got themselves into debt overall and they couldn't remake the pay. They couldn't make the payments that they owed on that debt. So they had to liquidate.
Wrong with that. Don't you agree with that? Well, there's something wrong with that.
So
who's
that,
managing the money?
Well, that was the thing.
Why were they going into debt?
It was, the reporting was that it was mismanagement at the top.
There it is. There's the answer. You change management. You don't close down the whole thing. I mean, that makes no sense. Every single time I went there, the store was full of people. So something there is wrong, okay? I like to say something stinks and something's rotten in Denmark. So I don't know. And then to get to you with your drawings with comic books. So if you were drawing that well, you could have worked for a major company for comic books and you could have made a lot of money.
So I that's what I had wanted to do when I was younger, but I wasn't very good. I didn't progress past a certain point, and I didn't have the passion for it. What happened was when I got to high school, there was a kid that was better than me, and he would berate my skills, and it just kind of killed my passion for it.
He berated you for it?
Yeah. So I just
went to school with a squirt gun. Let him have it.
I decided at that point I didn't really like it as much as I thought that I did. It started to get a little bit the more advanced the art gets and the more detailed it gets, it got too tedious for me. I didn't have the attention span for it.
What are your of the comic books that you used to buy and read? What was your favorite comic books?
I was a big Spider-Man person as a kid. Big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a kid, but I used to love the old horror comics. I used to love getting all of those, I would basically like find any comic books that I could and just read them. Didn't matter what it was. So if I bought a big bag of them at a yard sale or a flea market for a couple of bucks, I would just read them whether I knew what was going on in the stories or not.
Mm. Did you save any, like the real retro ones, you know?
I had a whole Foot Locker full of valuable comics that got stolen from me.
The only old magazine, well, I have a big collection of that me and my mother had of the Reminisce and Good Old Housekeeping, Good Old magazines. I only have one magazine, the Mad magazine. It's from the 70s. I still have it. And it's only one, but I can't seem to let it go. And my mother and I had so many yard sales and we sold so many books. But that one, I had to keep it. Did you read Mad magazine?
I did. For a while, I got it pretty much every month.
And there was a spinoff from the Mad. There was another one. I don't remember what it was called. Do you remember it?
So there was a competitor to Mad called Cracked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
they were nice to read. I enjoyed those books.
Mad had its mascot, Alfred E. Newman. Cracked had its mascot, Sylvester P. Smythe.
He's right on the cover. I'll send a pic of it. I just can't seem to let that go. But
no, it's probably worth something. So hang on to it.
Well, it's not in brand new condition, but it's pretty doggone good. My mother and I had so many, vandals, hoodlums. Back in the day, crooks and robbers and real stories, though. We only bought real stories. I don't like that fake stuff. I want something that is true stories. So we always bought true. We sold so many of them when we were starting to get tired of doing it because we did it for so many years. My mother had two different stores of her own right on North Front Street. They were both right on North Front Street back in the late 60s.
Wow.
And they were just secondhand stores. She had magazines, books, clothing. She had a good friend of hers that helped her a lot. She was always in the store with her every day. And I was young. Me and my brother would go and help her to carry some furniture in that people donated. It's fun to have a secondhand store, you know? If I was a little younger, I thought of it for many years. But my friends, they didn't want to get involved in that. But I was all gung-ho for it.
I've thought of it myself for many years.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if you're ever out looking through old magazines and you happen across the May 1st, 1920 edition of the Saturday Evening Post, it has a couple using a Ouija board on the cover. If you ever see that, grab that for me. I mean, I know I can find them online, but I want to find one out in the wild that's a little bit cheaper than what they go for online.
Yeah, you never know. You never know where you're going to see something, you know?
Yep, might be in a stack somewhere.
One time I hadn't gone to a yard sale for the longest freaking time, and then I went, I found a canister set that I always wanted, and this one lady had it, and I wasn't even going to go that day, but I went, and look what happened. So I love yard sales. You know, it's just been a while since I haven't gone too much anymore since my mother left, but there'll become a time when I'll have the urge to stop again. I drive by them now and I just go right by.
I
still have that feeling of my mom, so I don't do it. But really, when you want to do it, just do it because you don't know what you're going to find.
Absolutely. I got to hold you there. You have a great day.
All right. Yep, you too. Bye-bye.
And I got to take a quick break, and then we'll go into the news with Phil. We'll be right back. All right, it is time now to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt.
President Biden prepares for one of his final appearances on the world stage. A letter to the world, what Trump's would-be assassin said. And buckle up, things are getting weird.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
President Biden is in New York City today, where he will address the UN General Assembly. Scott Pringle reports.
This is one of Biden's last major speeches as president. He is expected to talk about the wars in Ukraine and Gaza and also talk about the future when it comes to the use of artificial intelligence and climate change. Meanwhile, Biden, while he's in New York, is hosting a summit to address synthetic drug threats. Biden's visit means more lane and street closures, and this could possibly be the worst day of traffic all week in Midtown Manhattan. Scott Pringle, NBC News Radio, New York.
The U.S. is sending additional forces to the Middle East. On Monday, the Pentagon said the move to send what was described as a small number of troops to the region is being made out of an abundance of caution. The decision comes as tensions continue escalating between Israel and Iranian-backed Hezbollah forces. Lebanese officials said Israeli airstrikes on Monday killed nearly 500 people, including dozens of children. The suspect in an apparent assassination attempt on former President Trump at a Florida golf course is being denied bond. NBC's Jesse Kirsch.
Bottom line, the defense's request not met. The government's request was, and so Ryan Ruth will remain behind bars. That is according to a U.S. federal judge. Proceedings just wrapped up. As you mentioned, we were in there for right around 3 hours.
The Justice Department revealed new evidence in the alleged assassination attempt, including a letter written by Ruth. The letter was addressed to the world and said, quote, "This was an assassination attempt on Donald Trump, but I failed you." The DOJ also said Ruth's cell phone accessed cell towers near Mar-a-Lago and Trump's golf course between August 18th and September 15th. Clemency is denied for a Missouri death row inmate. It's been in the headlines lately. Governor Mike Parson announced on Monday the state will move forward with the execution of Marcellus Williams. Williams is scheduled to be executed Tuesday for the 1998 murder of one-time reporter Felicia Gale. California is the latest state to require schools to limit or ban the use of smartphones. Governor Gavin Newsom signed the law Monday as research shows excessive use of the devices can hinder learning and increase the risk of mental illness. Over a dozen other states have passed similar rules this year. The last full-size Kmart store in the country closing its doors. The Kmart in Bridgehampton, New York will shut for good on October 20th. A smaller Kmart store in Miami still stands. There were about 2,300 locations in the U.S. at its height.
This song is just six words long. This song is just six words long.
And look for 2025 to get bigger and weirder thanks to Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al announcing his 65-day Bigger and Weirder tour, which will kick off with 5 shows at the Venetian in Las Vegas beginning on June 13th. The tour will hit 34 states in 4 months, including shows in Boston and Foxwoods in Connecticut in July. Weird Al said in a statement the shows will be the best of both worlds, featuring the crowd-pleasing parodies and deep cuts for the hardcore fans.
WBSM Sports.
Red Sox beat the Blue Jays 4-1 last night. We'll see if they can notch a fourth straight win tonight. Bruins searching for their first win of the preseason after falling to the New York Rangers 3-2 in their opener at TD Garden. The Bruins hosting the Washington Capitals this evening. And the Patriots visit the San Francisco 49ers on Sunday. Of course, we'll carry that game for you right here on WBSM.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Good to be with you, everybody, on this Tuesday morning. Continued onshore wind will keep the cloudiness in place. This morning, temperature in the upper 50s, mid-60s this afternoon with a northeasterly breeze. Mostly cloudy skies, mostly cloudy overnight. Mid-50s, mid-60s once again tomorrow. Slight chance for some showers tomorrow overnight into Thursday. Be sure to watch ABC 6 for my full 7-day forecast. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ceci Del Carmen on New Bedford News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM news update brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station WBSM. Get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
That's what's great. Even the Weird Al originals are, you know, they're kind of parodies because he always writes them in the style of somebody else. So that, of course, was Dare to Be Stupid, which was the title track of, I believe, the 1985 album of the same name. And it is an homage to Devo, that song. So
good.
And some of my favorite Weird Al songs are actually the originals and not the parodies. So I love the deep cuts. And I did not go to the most recent tours, but I did see him at the Zyterian years ago. The best show I've ever seen.
That's what I heard from everybody who went.
He puts on a show that you will not believe in. His band they can play anything. Because that's not like somebody taking the original track of a song and then Weird Al sings parody lyrics over it. That's his band learning how to sound like the band.
Yeah, that's true dedication.
I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to interview Weird Al's band. His drummer, John Bermuda Schwartz, put out a book because from the time that they started touring, and Bermuda was like the first member of the band with Al. And from the time they started touring, he had a camera with him all the time. Bermuda did. And he would take all these photos. And so he put them together in a book. And they were releasing the book. And the producer of my Midnight Society show, Michelle, she got Bermuda to come on and be a guest. And he's like, well, I'm going to bring the rest of the band on. You know, the band doesn't really get to talk that much. So we're going to bring the rest of. So I talked to Bermuda, Ruben, Chemo. Like, everybody came on. I think I'm forgetting somebody. But everybody came on and was all part of the discussion. And then I got a text from Bermuda as we were hosting the show. And he goes, just so you know, Al's listening right now.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
And I, like, freaked out. I was like, oh, my God, Weird Al, like, knows who I am.
That's right.
Like, childhood hero, for sure. And adulthood hero as well. Because, I mean, he's a guy who is, you know, that's somebody you should model your life after. A guy who can live weirdly and proudly and is a good person. And nobody has a bad word to say about Al.
Every time I see him have like a hit now, like some kind of big success, I get really, really happy about it.
Yeah.
Because he's been around for so long, and to see people still appreciate you that way, I mean, that's going to be a great feeling.
And he is appreciative of it. You know, the man has had a career that I think any musical artist would be envious of. And for people that would take shots at him and say, well, yeah, he made his living off of copying other people. But that's not what the genius is in what he does. Right. And the real artists, the people who he parodies, they all appreciate it. There was just that one time that Coolio didn't appreciate it, but there's even been some stories over the years that might have been manufactured drama. So I don't know. I don't know what to believe on that.
Right.
But yeah, that was one of the highlights, was getting to interview that band, because way back when I was like 10 years old, 9 or 10, maybe even 8, I was in, let me think, 1988. So I would have been 10 years old. I was in Bradley's in the Westgate Mall, and I had 10 bucks of, I think, leftover birthday money. And I'm standing there with two cassette tapes in my hand. I'm either buying the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper or Weird Al's Even Worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, I'm at this age, I know the Beatles. I know what they're all about. I didn't have any music from either one of them. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get Weird Al. And changed my life, set the course of who I was as a person and my sense of humor and all that. And thankfully, my aunt also had Sgt. Pepper, so she dubbed me a copy that night, so I didn't have to go without that one too. And of course, love the Beatles, but just Weird Al is a genius. There's no other word about it.
Maybe he's listening again right now.
Well, if you are, Al, we want to have you come on this program ahead of your show at the Box Center as part of this tour, or Foxwoods, you know, whichever one you want to come on and promote. But I am, was it Foxwoods or Mohegan? Which one?
Foxwoods.
Foxwoods,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, we are certainly going to try as hard as we can to get Al to come on the program. And you know who else I'm trying to get to come on, but he seems reluctant? I'm trying to get Dr. Demento to come on.
Right. Yep.
Because, again, hugely influential in my life. One of my favorite people to ever exist. I've been Facebook friends with him now for a number of years. And I came close to getting him for the Midnight Society show when he came out with Demented Punk, I think was the name of the album.
Yep.
And it just didn't end up happening. Didn't end up working out. So now I'm trying, but he's like, I don't have anything to promote. I'm like, you don't need to promote anything. You're Dr. Demento. Just come on and talk for 20 minutes. Give me 20 minutes of your time. It'll be the thrill of my life.
That would be one of the best conversations.
So we're working on it. I know, like, for some people, they say, oh, geez, Tim's got another guest on. I want to call in and talk about local issues. But sometimes we just got to geek out a little bit some stuff.
Yep.
So, and speaking of guests, we'll be joined in the next hour by Alice Hoffman. She has a new book out called When We Flew Away. It's a novel about Anne Frank before the diary. She, of course, is the author of Practical Magic and numerous other books. And she's going to talk with us about writing this new book, writing for young adult audiences. And I want to ask her about keeping stories of the Holocaust alive as the people who actually lived through it are passing away. So we'll get into all that coming up in the next hour. But really, the conversation can be about whatever you want it to be at 508-996-0500. We talked earlier about the new soccer complex that's being built at Dias Field. We talked about why. I mean, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes reasons why the Greater New Bedford Youth Baseball League is no more. But a big part of why it is no more is the lack of interest from the kids in that area to participate in the league and the lack of interest in baseball overall. You know, that league, I think, was, and Jack Splane wrote about this too in New Bedford Light months ago, that league was fueled by the kids that lived in the local housing developments wanting to play baseball and the parents not being able to drive them across the city to join the Wayland City League, which plays at Brooklawn Park, or the South End League, which plays at, what's it, out on Brock Avenue. Is it Clegg Field, I think? So there's, you know, probably kids that still want to play baseball in that neighborhood that can get to those other parks, those other fields. And then there were other kids that just didn't want to play that anymore. And so an adult soccer league came in and started using the fields. It wasn't really conducive to that anymore, you know, to that really to begin with. So they're going to remake it now for soccer use, and it'll become a state-of-the-art complex. So it'll breathe new life into a park that wasn't serving the community in the best way in recent years. There's also the story, too. New Bedford Light has it this morning. We'll probably have something a little bit later on it, but they're going to be opening a center in New Bedford, which we're going to talk about wind energy now, and I know that's going to get some people going, but the state has picked New Bedford for a new ocean energy center that will look into not only wind energy, but other ways that the ocean can be used to create energy for us to be able to use. And they're going to be basically taking a bit of a parking lot down on the New Bedford waterfront next to the counting house. And they're going to be building this state-of-the-art facility and leasing that property from the city for 15 years. And they will make payments to the city for that property in $38,000 a year in lease payments to the city for that property, which is what the Port Authority was making in parking fees from that site. And by the way, there will still be parking there. It's just going to be on the old Eversource site. So they're just moving the parking over a little bit to make room for this structure. They're going to pay the city $38,000 a year in lease payments, which is the same money they would have made if those parking lots were full. And if things don't work out, if this center closes up because ocean energy doesn't turn out to be the future that people thought it was, well, the city has a beautiful state-of-the-art building on the waterfront that they will own. So not a bad deal. The state's going to come in and build this facility. The city's going to own it. The center's going to lease it. The city's going to make money. And at the end of the lease, the city gets a building. Not bad at all. And you can see a rendering of it at newbedfordlight.org. 508-996-0500. I'm going to take a break right here. We will be back in a few moments. And welcome back in. 508-996-0500. Skeddy sent in a couple of app chat messages. We were talking earlier about the Cordage Park. We were talking about the flea market at Cordage Park and where we used to shop for back to school clothes. She said she loved the Cordage Park flea market, that there were great finds there. Yeah, we didn't run the table there too long, I don't think, but I enjoyed it. It was really cool, too, because the guy that ran Cordage Park gave me like a little part-time job. He would have me run around the main buildings and open up all the doors when Cordage Park opened and, you know, just go there and, pulled a little latch that would open, that would lock, unlock them so people could open them. And he paid me $5 to go around and do all those so that he didn't have to do it. But I'll tell you this, that flea market was kind of down toward where Walmart was in Cottage Park later. It's not there now anymore, but where it was, that's kind of where the flea market was. And I would go to the bathrooms in the main part of, like, closer to the, like, where the mill store was. And going in there at 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, I'm telling you, that place is super haunted. And I've always wanted to go back and do an investigation there, but a company came in and bought it and was not really down with letting that happen. So they never responded to any of my inquiries to come over there and check it out. But I've heard so many stories over the years, and I know that it's haunted. I had weird stuff that would happen when I would go into that bathroom. Doors that would open and close on their own. But anyway, she also says, we went to Stones and Woolworth, and we thought we were very lucky to shop at Stones. In our eyes, it was ritzy. Woolworths, I love to go not only for the cheap clothes, but for the diner and restaurant that was inside. I always got an ice cream sundae there and a tuna melt. I think the Woolworth lunch counter is the first place I ever had a tuna melt. And I was like, grilled cheese with tuna inside? Two of my favorite things combined? This is amazing. And then she also asked, I had referenced that I had comics in a Foot Locker that was stolen. She said, that's terrible. Yeah, it was a whole thing where we had professional movers and it got left behind. And I don't know how it got left behind. And then the landlord had moved into the house after we moved out, and the Foot Locker was in there. I could see it through the basement window, and he said, no, it's not here, and it just turned into a whole thing. So I'm sure most of the stuff I had in there wasn't really worth anything now, but I thought back then that was my retirement fund. So, my Venom number one, I'm sure would have lasted me, it might have afforded me one day's worth of taking care of myself in retirement. That's the thing, is like we collect things thinking to ourselves, oh, this is going to be worth so much money. And then we're disappointed when it's not. Like savings bonds, I got so many savings bonds. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be so rich off savings bonds later. And no, I never really was. I think they got me like a semester's worth of books in college. So I guess it didn't work out the way that I thought that it would. Anyway, 508-996-0500. I've got to take a break here. My final one for this hour. We'll return in just a few. Got you back on this show. Said I think it's a total disgrace. And I swear, I fight, don't destroy, always win. Knew that John Mellencamp was such a rebel back then. Do you remember that episode of Knight Rider? There was an episode of Knight Rider where there was like a ring of criminals, and every time that the radio played When the Walls Come Crumbling Down, that was when that was like their signal to go out and commit a crime. The details are kind of sketchy, but I remember that song being a prominent part of that episode. Knight Rider was a cool show. A weird show, but a cool.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.